I was kind of directing the activity because of my body running the show. You know, everyone was assuming that things were going to go well. And that was the assumption that really played into me feeling confident and good about what happened.
Welcome to What You Didn't Expect in Fertility, Pregnancy, and Birth. How we think and feel about this enormous transition often lives in the gap between what we expected and what we actually experienced. This gap exists in part because of how we tend to talk about and portray these events on all kinds of media. In a one-dimensional way, everything was amazing. But it's more often the case that there are beautiful things that happen and, at the same time, really challenging things that happen. This show shares true experiences, both the easy parts and the difficult parts, and how we managed what we didn't expect. The intense things that can happen in the course of this transition can impact how you see yourself, how you see your partner, and how you parent. The better we understand what happened to us, the better we can manage all the things that follow. I'm your host, Paulette Kamenica. I'm a writer and an economist and the mother of two girls, and I met many, many challenges in this process, none of which I expected. In today's episode, we talk about some important ingredients you need for a good birth, which focus on the type of support you receive during that birth. We talk about what clues might suggest that you need breastfeeding help and how to find it, and we touch on autoimmune issues that might surface in the postpartum period. In this, the last of three episodes, we pick up where we left off last week. Kelly is about to give birth to her second child in her home, attended by a midwife. She's been in intense labor for an hour and is stating to the midwife her strong, strong preferences for a break.
So I was in a squatting position. I had somebody pressing on my back, lower back, really giving a lot of pressure. And that helped me feel like I could cope. I was in, for about 30 minutes, I was in a space where I couldn't even get a word out. I was so focused. I was really at the height of intensity with that labor. And it was, I remember the only thing I said to my midwife was, I really, really need a break. And she said, Kelly, I wish I could give you a break, but this is just coming. The baby's just coming. And I was like, okay, it's happening now.
This is amazing. I have to say, it sounds super empowering. So I'm imagining that's how you're feeling when it's over?
Absolutely. And you can't imagine. And I think I kept that feeling for months. Like, it never dissipated. And I thought, this is what birth is supposed to be like. And so few people ever get there. It's an incredible experience. It changed my entire life. That one moment. I can't necessarily say the same thing about my first birth because it was wrapped up with so many strange things. And I was just glad when it was over and I thought, okay, I'm relieved. But after the second one, I immediately knew everything about myself and my power in life. My vision of my own self completely changed. It was intense. It was a mental shift that I don't think there are too many other experiences in your life that can bring this clarity or this shift. And I can't explain it. It was intense and so worthwhile.
It sounds amazing. And I know this is a tricky question, but can you put into words what the shift was?
So for me, I think I have never been a person who is timid or highly doubtful of myself. I did have a fairly good idea of what was going on with my personal vision of who I am and what I was about. But also, looking back from my position now, I'm 50, even at 37 when I had her, I still felt like I was sort of so young. I didn't know what I was doing. I didn't feel the lack of confidence per se, but I also just felt like, oh, I'll just go with the flow. Everything changed in that moment. And I literally felt this is going to sound completely nuts, but I felt like I had this moment where every woman who's ever given birth, every person in the world who's ever given birth, in the way that I accessed it mentally in that moment, we were all doing it together. It was all like this strange mental space where I was sort of in a community This existed in my mind, of course, but it wasn't a conscious thought. I didn't direct these thoughts. I was in a space where every person who's ever given birth was with me. That seems really strange. I know it does, but I was accessing this other consciousness, if that's what you want to call it. And when I came out of that experience, I realized that anything that I ever want to accomplish, anything, it doesn't matter what it is. If I decide that I want to do it, I will do it. I can do everything and undertake anything. Now, does that mean that I'm going to, you know, accomplish every goal in the world? No, but the goals that I want to do, I will accomplish them because I have it like opened a door to this place in my psyche, I guess, that allowed me to see the true nature of me as the person who could give birth, of my body, of my confidence in my abilities to do anything. But it relates to my whole life, not just to reproductive activities.
I don't want to suck the magic out of this description, but I'm including some of what the research says about this aspect of birth to reinforce the fact that Kelly is not alone in this amazing experience of birth. I found a few articles that try to collect information both about the chemistry and the emotional aspects of birth. I will include the excerpts of one of those articles called Birth as a Neuropsychosocial Event, an Integrative Model of Maternal Experiences and the Relation to Neurohormonal Events During Childbirth. The authors write, as labor becomes even more intense, women describe how they focus on the importance of living in that moment, and time feels suspended. The perception of time and space changes, and women can experience intense feelings, which is compatible to an altered state of consciousness. Women may feel they are worlds apart from people in the same room, that the universe has narrowed to this one task they have to do. Some women mention transcendental experiences, of feeling part of the divine, the universe, or gaining a deeper understanding of or being a part of nature. Women may describe a sense of transformation. Some women describe themselves as a changed person in the sense that they feel stronger, empowered, and ready to meet the demands of the newborn. Overall, the journey through childbirth means a growth in personal strength, a transformation that leads to an empowered self. The authors go on to examine how the hormones released from the brainstem, mostly oxytocin, interacts with the body's stress response and how this interplay can in part explain some of the feelings described. I will link to this article in the show notes if you want to read the whole thing.
That's amazing. And it does sound like in some way you're channeling the energy of everyone around you to give you the power to do this really hard thing. And once you've done it, you know, there's no going back, right? You've obviously done this incredibly difficult thing.
But you know what's funny? And this is one of the things I look back on. I didn't realize it at the time. Everyone there in the room expected me to be fully capable and confident and accomplish this. Sometimes I think in other birth settings, there's a lot of doubt and there's a lot of lacking of that feeling like, oh, she's going to handle this or whatever. And I feel like that chips away at people's ability to get in the zone, to access their capability of reaching this position where, you know, there is a different mental space. There is a different mental space that we access when we can get to this place of natural birth without people who are imposing their own view of what should be happening, or maybe a clinical setting that says you have these time limits or we've got to do these procedures. I wouldn't say it was a free-for-all, but in the way that it went down, I was kind of directing the activity because of my body running the show. You know, everyone was assuming that things were going to go well. And that was the assumption that really played into me feeling confident and good about what happened.
I think one takeaway for people who can't necessarily do a home birth or don't feel comfortable in that setting is that support is critical, right? I do think that you're
exactly right, because everyone there was believing in me. And so if you go to a clinical setting, bring folks who believe in you. And that's the key. There was nothing magical about me being in my house. That's not the key here. It was that I somehow had prepared myself. I dealt with some of the fears and I had a team that believed in me. And that's what makes the difference.
Yeah, that's amazing. That's a great story. I'm so glad that you shared that. I'm hoping, with fingers crossed, that the second postpartum It is a way to average out your first experience, which is to say that this daughter sleeps immediately and breastfeeds so easily and there's no tongue tie.
You must have read my mind because all of that is true.
Awesome.
She was a far better sleeper and better, happier baby. She didn't have any of the complications. She may have had the world's most mild tongue tie, but it didn't impact feeding. She was just way easier. And it was then that I realized that the lactation wisdom that says breastfeeding shouldn't hurt is actually true. And it can work that way. I never had any pain with breastfeeding my second daughter. And this was after 8 or 9 months of pain breastfeeding my first.
So it sounds like some advice that you would give to people is if you are having pain, go see a lactation consultant or someone to help you with that, because that is not normal.
Absolutely. And I will tell you that almost everywhere, and including online spaces, volunteer breastfeeding support is available for people. It's free and it is a real pathway towards excellent support. Just because people are volunteers doesn't mean that they don't have training or that they're not excellent peer supporters of breastfeeding. So I would encourage anyone who is experiencing trouble, whether it's pain or something else to do with breastfeeding, if you can't reach out to a lactation consultant today, call a volunteer breastfeeding supporter. LaLHK League is one national organization, and there are many others, Breastfeeding USA, and there are several others out there. But it's accessible and it's free.
So two questions about that. The first one is, can you get that kind of help online? Can you Zoom?
Absolutely.
So you can Zoom, so that makes it more accessible. The second one is, isn't it supposed to hurt a little in the beginning, or there's supposed to be no pain ever?
So a lot of people, the lactation wisdom, if you read it, says that breastfeeding should never hurt. But the truth is, if you're going from zero to breastfeeding 8 to 10 times a day overnight, which is exactly what happens after we have our babies, there is a period of like, okay, my skin is feeling sensitive. Maybe your nipples are very sensitive as they adjust. The other thing that can cause nipple soreness is hormonal shift. And in that moment, that first week postpartum, dramatic hormonal shifts are taking place. So I would agree with you that there is a mild expectation of, yeah, this is definitely going to be interpreted as some kind of maybe tenderness, soreness, pain, but it's not going to be intense or serious pain if things are going well. If anybody experiences intense pain, soreness, nipple trauma, breast pain, where you're feeling like, okay, I can't even do this. This is not doable. That is a signal that something is wrong. And yes, reach out to somebody immediately.
Okay. So that's good advice. So we will follow that. And one thing we talked about before we got online is autoimmunity, which I assume at some point plays a role in your story.
It does. Yeah. So like many people, I started having all kinds of what I was interpreting as strange health issues in the postpartum year following my second pregnancy. Looking back, I felt like it happened immediately. Like as soon as she was born, I didn't feel like myself. And I had already had one child. So I knew, you know, like, okay, this is a little bit different. I went to several doctors. I went to thyroid specialists. I saw eye doctors, vision specialists. Things were just off. And everyone said to me, this is just shifting in the postpartum year. You'll be fine after 12 months. And I continued to spiral and I did not get better.
So what's going wrong here? What are you bringing to the doctors?
So I was having trouble with night vision, which is really weird for me. I've always had perfectly good vision. I couldn't watch TV at night. I didn't want to drive at night because the lights from the road, that was really irritating. I started having what I expected to be excessive feelings of being tired. I wasn't digesting food very well. I know this sounds completely nuts, but I did experience like a really rapid weight loss, which is not normal. People around me were like, Kelly, something is wrong. So that was a red flag. I was also I felt like hormonally inspired pelvic pain. That the only way I could interpret it. Nobody could find anything wrong. I went to my primary care. I went to a midwife. I went to a thyroid doctor. I went to an eye doctor. And everyone said to me, everything is fine. You're fine. But I wasn't. And this continued to spiral. And when my youngest was about to turn 4, I was diagnosed with Hashimoto's thyroiditis, which is autoimmune in nature. And I know that it started immediately after she was born. I had what happened was I had like a super high burst of thyroid activity, which was probably thyroid destruction, in which the cells are on a blood test. It looks like your thyroid is overactive or even normal. But the truth is there was so much destruction going on that I was slowly heading into hypothyroid, which is where I've been since then. She will turn 15 in January of 24, and I'm still struggling with autoimmunity. This is not something that you can get over, but I think I live pretty well with it in terms of like the changes that I've been able to make. But she was 4 by the time I got diagnosed. So for the first 4 years postpartum, I was just grabbing at straws. Like, what in the world is wrong with me? And I couldn't figure it out.
Yeah. So I've had that Hashimoto since I was 19. So I'm with you on that one. And for sure, it can cause dramatic weight loss, right? When the thyroid hormone is too high, like that is a feature of thyroiditis. And I'm so sorry that it took so long to diagnose. And that's common, right?
It is
that women go to their doctors and there's like 80 autoimmune conditions and a lot of them skew female.
And, yeah, absolutely.
And so it is often the case that women are being gaslit at their appointments where they say you're fine when you're not fine,
yep.
Which is super frustrating. So it's complicated and I've done a lot of research on this, but it is most common for women to get autoimmune conditions after one of the 3 giant swings in their hormones, puberty, pregnancy, menopause.
Yes.
So the timing totally fits, right? And it is.
It absolutely is.
Part of what makes it so hard is conventional medical departments are divided in certain ways that keeps your symptoms in separate places so that you don't bring this eye issue to the endocrinologist and you don't bring the pelvic pain to the rheumatologist. And so it's very hard to put it together.
Right.
Why don't you share with us any success that you have found?
Well, before I come in on that, I would like to just say that just like we get screened during pregnancy for insulin swings and gestational diabetes, to be honest, I feel that thyroid screening during pregnancy and in the postpartum year should be standard of care.
So Kelly brings up a really good point here. We routinely screen for things like gestational diabetes, which can affect things like blood pressure, and can lead to a baby that's too large and require a C-section at delivery and can have bad consequences for the baby. Estimates of its prevalence are somewhere between 2 and 10%. Postpartum thyroiditis is estimated to be an issue for between 5 and 10% of women after birth. We don't know what causes it, but one theory is that the birthing person had an underlying condition that was too mild to be noticed before pregnancy and birth, and the stress of those experiences made the condition more active. Current estimates are that 20 to 30% of this group will experience the thyroiditis as a permanent condition.
And a lot of times the postpartum thyroiditis can resolve. It doesn't have to turn into Hashimoto's or Graves' disease, but it is common for the people that have it that it does turn into an autoimmune condition. For me, I was in a space where I was really trying hard to take care of myself. I knew something was dramatically wrong. I didn't quite put my finger on it. And I was just doing everything that I felt I could do to up my game or get an edge on how can I protect my health in certain ways. By the time I figured it out, I had been doing a little bit of reading on autoimmunity. But when the doctor said, you have autoimmune disease, I was like, what? That's not me. Something is wrong with me. But it's going to be something that I can fix. That's going to be completely, I just need the answer. And then when I found out about autoimmunity, I was like, wait a minute, that's really not something that's easy to overcome. You don't just snap your fingers or change your diet, even though that is a key piece. And so she said to me, we don't know what causes this. You just take this medication for the rest of your life. And I was like, I'm going to look for some alternatives. Let me see what else is out there before I opt in for this. So I went to see an herbalist, which for most people, maybe that's completely off the radar. But oddly enough, this woman had a daughter who had Hashimoto's thyroiditis. And she said to me, here are some things that you can do. And she counseled me on changing diet, avoiding all inflammatory foods, inflammatory oils, really avoiding processed food, giving up gluten. That was one thing that I did. Some people don't do it. I felt at the time, I was like, you know, maybe I'll just try it. Just do a few months and see how I feel. That was 12 years ago. So I definitely tried and I'm still doing it. But I also have tried things and then gone back. Like I tried a year of dairy-free, but I went back to it. You know, I didn't feel like that was something I needed to do. So I've kind of tried a whole bunch of things. I've been to every sort of expert. At this point, I kind of feel like I'm on my own. I feel like I'm out there. I can consult with a doctor if I need help, but I have stabilized my thyroid health in some way. This past year has been stressful, and I do recognize that for me, stress is a bit of a trigger. I think it is for a lot of people who have thyroid disease. And I know that it affects me not just with thyroid, but also adrenal function. And I can tell right away when I'm getting into a space where I really need to up my game, take some supplements, go check my thyroid numbers on a blood test, or do some very specific gut healing protocol or something. So I do cycle through all this stuff, but it's never, ever in the back of my mind. It's always in the front of my mind, and I take it very seriously. Since my kids were born, I have never taken my foot off the gas of having my health as a primary focus.
Yeah, that's sort of what you have to do, right? That's it.
Yeah.
For sure with autoimmunity too, right? It is a,
yeah.
It is a lifestyle.
It absolutely is. And I think when I first saw this and I first became diagnosed, I didn't get that. It took me a long time to come around to that idea.
Well, it is. If you go to a conventional doctor, right, that is absolutely to this day, the standard of care is you take this thyroid supplement, which will replace what your thyroid is not producing, and goodbye and good luck, right? There's no,
yeah,
which is not that satisfying.
Yeah. And for me, I felt like, gosh, there's got to be other alternatives. So I'll go find out what they are, you know?
Yeah. One note about autoimmunity, because it's so important for your health and well-being and common after pregnancy. For something like 70 years, rheumatologists have said that there is no cure for autoimmunity. In some ways, this makes sense. It's a really complicated disease in which your immune system mistakenly attacks part of your body. In thyroiditis, it's your thyroid, obviously. MS affects the brain and spinal cord. Lupus affects joints. As I mentioned, I've had far too much experience with multiple autoimmune conditions since I was 19, and I've always been told that they cannot be cured. But in 2020, I bumped into functional medicine, and that has made an enormous difference in my life. The goal of this form of medicine is to treat the root cause of the problem rather than to tamp down symptoms. For me, most of my doctor's attention has focused on diet as opposed to new drugs. If you're struggling with an autoimmune condition, I'd encourage you to check it out. I don't personally benefit in any way from this PSA, but I've tried everything, and this is the only thing that's worked for me. You can check out ifm.org for Institute of Functional Medicine to look for a provider near you. I'll leave a link in the show notes. Is there anything you want to add about what your childbirth education looks like or what you would recommend or...
Actually, yeah, I will add one thing. I don't know if I told you this, but I recently published a book, which is really exciting. I am a lactation consultant, and I've been doing a combination of volunteer breastfeeding support and clinical, more clinical type of breastfeeding support. I don't work as a clinician. However, I do occasionally provide people with more than volunteer breastfeeding support, if that makes any sense. But after all these years, I decided I've got to really get the word out about how to protect and promote breastfeeding. So I published a book a few months ago called Protecting Your Potential for Breastfeeding. And it is something that highlights all of the things that you never had any idea were going to creep into your experience and sabotage your breastfeeding intentions. That's my main work at this point.
That's super cool. Well, thank you so much for coming and sharing your amazing story. It's very inspiring. I would not have other kids, but this makes me want to have other kids. Try it again the Kelly way.
You know, I didn't want to look back and feel like I let go of my own goals or intentions. I really wanted so much to try this. And people tried to talk me out of it. Don't have your baby at home. That's so silly. And I thought, my house is literally 5 minutes from the hospital. Nothing is going to go wrong. Yeah, I knew that I could make it work. And even if it had worked out differently, at least I would have tried it.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, it's very cool. For sure, your birth is something to shoot for.
Well, it's funny. I wish maybe in some alternate universe that I could have tried it again. People come away from birth often thinking, oh, next time.
Yeah.
But I knew there wasn't going to be a next time for me. I wanted to do it a certain way. And I knew that that was going to be it.
Yeah. Well, it sounds like you couldn't really improve on that second one. So
yeah, it was a great experience. It was.
That's awesome. Well, thank you so much for coming on.
Thank you so much for chatting with me today. It was really fun.
Thanks again to Kelly for sharing the highs and lows of her pregnancy, birth, and postpartum experiences. There's so much learning in her story, and I'm totally inspired by the sense of empowerment she gained from the second birth and how it played into her future life decisions. I'll end with a brief excerpt from Kelly's book, Protecting Your Potential for Breastfeeding. She writes, "The potential for making human milk in modern society is truly a balancing act. First, you must be aware of the factors that can tip the balance toward lactation success or lactation failure. Then you must choose wisely which factors you will interact with and how much interaction you will have. The difficulty that arises for many people is knowing what factors in our lives negatively affect breastfeeding." And then her book goes on to highlight the factors that make breastfeeding more difficult and those that make breastfeeding more likely to be successful. I'll put a link in the show notes if you want to investigate her book. Thanks again for listening. If you like this episode, please share it with friends. We'll be back next week with another inspiring story.